Welcome to another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl. I am the children's and family pastor here at Stonebriar Community Church. The children's pastor part is pretty straightforward. It's our kids from birth to 12th grade, and the family part is and their parents. And we have with us a couple of those parents today. We have Sheena Creek, and I've got a little bio here for you.
All right, let's hear it.
Derived from what you wrote. I'm not just making stuff up.
It won't be a surprise.
Though I am prone to do that if it would be funnier. But we'll go with what you've got. But so you and Greg have been married for 11 years. You are a work-at-home mom, a wife, and you volunteer a lot at church. You've got two kids, Colleen, who's 6 and in kindergarten this year, and Jansen, who's 3, and he thinks he should be in kindergarten, but he's not yet. You've recently come back to the early childhood team as a hall supervisor, and early childhood at Stonebriar means preschool, but we have a weekday preschool program, so we're confusing everybody. So early childhood is what we call preschool here on Sundays and Wednesdays. You and Greg both serve as high school volunteers on Wednesday nights. I'm not sure what crime you committed to deserve that.
Linda asked.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank
Linda's
you for doing
always
that.
To blame.
You have been known to sew.
Yes.
Some time ago, probably more before kids, but you do have that on your resume. And I see here that you and Greg try to see concerts every summer. So what's up for this summer?
Well, technically not summer, but in September, The Who are coming.
The Who?
And we got our tickets.
Now, they've got to not be in their 20s any longer.
No.
Right, so we got to see them
before they break a hip or something.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Very fun. All right, and then Morgan Davis, you and Jeff have been married for 8 years. You've got 3 children, 6, 3, and 1. You are also on staff here in the early childhood department as a hall supervisor. You also teach and dabble in the choir world. I did not know that until I read this. You were a public school choir director until you chose to stay at home. You direct a homeschool choir and spend a lot of time judging and working with choirs still. Jeff is a software engineer and the director of technology for a startup in Dallas. You were college sweethearts. And you lead a woman's small group with and Bible study on Wednesday mornings. So you are both here primarily because, not because you do all this stuff, and certainly not because you're perfect.
Right.
Definitely
you,
not.
You know that part,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. You're actually, we invited you here because you are rather famous around here for being authentic.
Thank you.
And we want to talk about that today, about why perhaps that was a choice you made, or you just one day looked around and realized, this is just how I roll. I never really thought about it. And the premise that I'm coming at today is that's not very typical. Hmm. Most of us are terrified of people actually finding out who we are and who we're not. And a lot of time, energy, and perhaps even money is spent on camouflaging ourselves, presenting ourselves, perhaps even to spouses and family, mm-hmm. as something that we're not, which is a life-sucking, horrible place to be. And you two are not that at all. So that's why we're here talking with you today. So thank you for submitting yourself to this kind of scrutiny. as I just kind of alluded to, authenticity is not a universally positive term. I mean, around here we use it in that way, but if you say that in a crowd at the mall, I don't know, 60% of the people would suck in their breath. Like, that's the last thing they're interested in. We want today to begin to dispel the myth that you have to be perfect to be loved. And since you can't be perfect,
right?
That's a horrible goal to have, even mm-hmm. subconsciously. You can't. Mm-hmm. Then the only actual option is to fake it. until you're caught and rejected. Mm-hmm. So I don't want anybody to live like that, and neither of you do. So we want to find out how you navigate that, how you got to be that way. And you get to be authentically and say, I got nothing. I don't know. Because we're just going to navigate this and propose that you get to be profoundly imperfect. We say around Stonebriar all the time, we only let broken people into our church, and we sure as shooting only hire broken people. So that's the premise that we work from. So I'd like to paint a picture of living in a home or even thriving in relationships outside the home with healthy authenticity. So what's the, this is a philosophical question. What's the point?
Of being authentic?
Of being authentic. Why would you even choose that?
Well, I mean, I guess this isn't very philosophical, but you point out that it takes a lot of energy and time to pretend to be otherwise, and I don't know, maybe I'm just too lazy, but I don't have the energy for that, and I'm kind of introverted, so to talk to people and to act perfect would take way too much energy.
That, I like that. How interesting. I wouldn't have thought of you as an introvert, by the
way. I know, people say that.
But she is. Yeah, and I think I'm attracted to people who I can see right from the start, you're the real deal. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm getting who you are as a person, and there's no facade or something I need to break through to get to know you better. Because I think we've all had periods where you're trying to put on a perfect display, right? We have a perfect marriage, and look at our beautiful home and our precious children and matching clothing, and it's just not, that's not true. And that's not, it's exhausting spending time trying to do that.
What does it feel like, since the two of you are rather expert at being authentic, what does it feel like to be authentic?
It's pretty messy. Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, you need to surround yourself with people who are okay if you haven't vacuumed. And and if you, you know, say a curse word, you can know that, okay, it's going to be okay. I'm not going to be judged for that. But I think it's also pretty freeing to feel like I don't have to live up to anybody else's standards. In some places, that's more comfortable than others.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the more freeing part, like, I feel like when I do try to live up to this, to an expectation, I think about it afterwards. Did I do that right? Like, I wonder what they're thinking right now. Did I wear this right? I bet they wouldn't have worn that.
You play the tape back.
But if I'm just me, I don't have to think about it because it's just me. And then I've kind of just gotten the attitude of, if they don't like it, then... Nice words, but like Morgan said, like, I'll just... It's a kind of a nice way to figure out who you want to spend your time with, who you want to spend your energy on, and if someone is going to judge me for being real or having a bad day, then I don't need that right now. But then hopefully they also know that when they do want to be real, that they can talk to me.
So operating in authenticity is not a level of constant success and peace and calm, because you've chosen to live this way, and it's just great to be there every day.
And sometimes it is a choice, though, to choose to live that way, and I think it's made me a better parent because of it. Because I thought my child would be perfect, because all of you, I see all of your parenting mistakes, and I'm going to achieve much better than you. And then God gave me Grady. And whatever my expectation is that he is going to perform behaviorally, he's going to do the opposite. And when I started to focus on his character rather than his behavior, it made me a much better parent because my expectation became, you know, is this really something I'm going to die on a hill for right here, right now? Or am I more concerned about who he is becoming as a person?
So that's, I think you said character over behavior. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. Because there's, I think there's a verse in the Bible about raising up a child in the way he should go, not the way I have planned.
And so that looks good.
So discovering what they have on board and what they don't have, which is, and I think the common word here is it's just kind of messy. And it might get cleaned up because, you know, company's coming, but the next time, they, you know, maybe not. It's so it, there's, I had a friend talk to me this week about a sine wave. It's just going up and down. And in like, he was like, why is life like that? And I think, oh my gosh, I think life is like that. I think we might do well either by accident or because we've focused exceptionally on a certain thing, but I can't do that for everything. And then the next thing is bring over a bucket of wings and I got cups for warm water. I mean, I just, I don't have it and that's all I've got. And then the next one I might, so I would like to also dispel the myth that if you were authentic, it's just peaceful and lovely and either very high or very low, but it's not. It's, I'm going to work hard on that thing and I'm choosing to not perhaps spend the energy on, and let's talk about excellence, because I find that to be often used as a rather toxic term.
Yeah.
What does excellence mean for you?
In what context? Just
in how you raise your kids, in your marriage. I mean, who doesn't want excellence? And I would suggest, as in terms of relationship, it's a horrible word. Excellence is the wrong word.
Yeah, I think you'll wear yourself out with that.
Because I don't even know.
But you'll never attain it. So if you're always striving for that and you're never attaining it, then what does that actually do to your marriage or to your parenting?
And excellent to who?
That's a,
like,
that's
are we talking like to your neighbors, and are you making your house look like is Texas Monthly going to come out and take pictures tomorrow? So I think that's what excellence kind of does. You look at magazines and Instagram, and these people are making it seem like this is their this is their real life, but it can't be. Yeah, so I think excellence would be a terrible thing to shoot for or to claim that you have.
I think as it pertains to any relationship, it's the wrong word. And so did you come by this, both of you, either of you, instinctively? I mean, were you raised this way, or did you hit a point where you're like, I'm just tapping out of the whatever I was doing before and going to do it differently? What, how did you come to this?
My family was pretty raw and real growing up. I have five siblings. Both my parents were married before. We kind of just talked about everything. So not that, you know, my family did everything right, but we didn't put on airs ever. And if my parents tried, I'm sure that we spoiled that very quickly.
That's what kids are for.
So, and then we moved around so much that, because my parents were in the military, that just impressing people all the time, like I'd have to do it every 2 years. So I just decided not to.
So you inherited this.
So I inherited this.
What about you, Morgan?
Yeah, I don't think I inherited it. I don't think, I think my family was given some circumstances that had to bring out the messy and the real. My dad died when I was 10. And so things were imperfect, and obviously so. But I think I was more raised to the, like, everything needs to be pretty perfect. Everything needs to look pretty great. I mean, our house was beautiful. Our yard was beautiful. It seemed like our family was great and perfect. And look at all that my children are achieving. And I feel like it's something I had to kind of discover and work on in my adulthood, for sure.
Was there a, and I don't want to, like, eviscerate you on the air here, but was there a singular moment? Was it a building up of this is too much, or was there a moment where you just decided I'm tapping out?
I think my mom has a pretty critical spirit, and it finally came to the point where I realized, like, I'm never going to reach the perfection that is somehow being expected. And so I kind of worked through that.
I think that's a great word for all parents to ponder, because every parent would say, I just want my kid to be the best that they can be. Now, I don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. So if the kid stayed up till midnight to study and got, you know, a high B, when, I mean, even for a kid to be told, I just want you to do your best, I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. That means I should have stayed up till 2?
Mm. Yeah.
I could have worked harder, I suppose, and I could have not eaten or slept for 2 days. Parents commonly overwhelm their kids with expectations that the parents are doing out of a sense of nobility, of I want the best for my kid. And you have to figure this out for each, not just your kids, each child. Like you said, you know, your Grady was, the second ones usually are kind of a joke from God. Like, you thought you had this down. Well, here's number two. Mm-hmm. And the rules are different, and you're supposed to figure out for each child what they are. And I think, again, if you use the word excellence, I just want my kid to be excellent. I think you're in really toxic territory. Mm-hmm. And you experienced enough of that to just take a hard fork in the road. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I think it is hard with their age, like, especially now that Colleen's in kindergarten. I feel like now it's even harder to stay real and not get wrapped up in all the ribbon and everything that people seem to do for every single occasion now. I can't believe how many dress-up days they have at school. And
the expectation that then we need to go out to the store.
Right, and then buy stuff for all of these dress-up days. And so I find myself being like, okay, well, I think this is crazy, and I wouldn't do this, but should I do this? Because Colleen will feel like, oh, everybody else did it, and my mom didn't do it. But I have all year just forced myself, and that's where it's not easy, to be like, no, this is crazy. She needs to know that this is crazy. We'll do fun stuff if I have it in the house or if it's in the dollar spot. But we did 12 days of Christmas leading up to Christmas break where they had to dress up as something.
12 things?
12 things. This is after Red Ribbon Week and Spirit Week. And
right.
So
I'm tired just hearing that.
I know.
And then you have the 100th day.
And you have the 100th day. And next week is Dr. Seuss week. They have to dress up in Dr. Seuss attire. And then Valentine's Day. That was a hard one because I knew people were going to do the big boxes that they do now. Mm-hmm. But Colleen, she was cool with just sticking a bunch of pom-poms and coloring on a gift bag. I was like, yes. But I was worried that she was going to go to school and be like, oh, this other person had like a dragon Valentine's gift box, and you put the Valentine's in the dragon's mouth, and then real fire comes out. But she loved her pom-pom bag.
I think another, it's not a synonym, but an additional descriptive word for authenticity, it's attached somehow, is intimacy. Hmm. And perhaps without authenticity, you can't have intimacy. Perhaps that's the connection I'm reaching for. Mm-hmm. So if I cannot be authentic with my spouse, that displaces intimacy. Hmm. If I cannot be authentic with my friends, they don't know who I am. And one of the most common complaints I hear from people who are suffering relationally is nobody knows who I am. Nobody gets me. Nobody. I have no connection to people. And often it's an unconscious decision that they have made to not let anybody know who they are, because their assumption is the next thing that will happen is out-and-out rejection. Mm-hmm. So the pursuit for intimacy, and this is from John Piper, intimacy is what we call the experience of really knowing and being known by another person. I think from the Garden of Eden, we were designed, it's in our spiritual DNA, I long to be known and loved. And yet sin brought in, but if you're known, you're going to be rejected. Mm-hmm. And we've all experienced, I mean, that's not a fantasy. We've all experienced. Mm-hmm. So we have this innate drive, desire, longing for intimacy. And almost as powerfully, we have an innate fear of being known and rejected. The being known part is not the fear. It's just there's a kind of a certainty that it will result in the rejection. Mm-hmm. And we've all experienced it. We experienced it in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Somebody laughed at, you know, your clothes, your hair, whatever. Right. That's not made up. So in this pursuit of authenticity, surely you've been, I mean, there's a dark side. Because you are opening yourself up. I will tell you what I think. How have you been hurt? Has someone tried to train you to not be authentic?
That's a big question.
I guess I would say the most hurt I've been when being authentic was when we were going through infertility and adoption, because people just say the craziest things. And so I thought, like, I was doing the right thing. Like, I was sharing our story. And so it just stung when it would come back to bite me. And I mean, because there's a lot that I think people don't know, and I want people to know a lot. And I'm proud of our story and our kids, but people will say just crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. So that hurt, but I didn't stop because they still need to know this beautiful thing that is also messy. And
that's when it becomes a choice.
Yeah.
Authenticity isn't just a party.
Right.
There are moments, and not just one.
Right.
There are a series of moments where you're mm-hmm. you're going to take a body blow.
Yeah.
And you've got to decide. And perhaps it's, okay, with this person, I cannot. Mm-hmm. It's smart mm-hmm. to not stick your hand in a lion's cage.
Right.
So, of course, the option is not, I'm going to be inauthentic with that person. I'm just not going to mm-hmm. participate with that, because they're just not healthy or they're not safe. But so it still happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As adults, I mean, all the time.
And I think the key word there is safe, right? Like mm-hmm. it's okay to set a boundary mm-hmm. because that's not going to be a safe relationship and a safe spot to land. I had postpartum depression horribly after my second child. And I some people understood and met me right where I was, and they were comfortable knowing, mm-hmm. like, this is a dark time and a dark place, and I'm in the pit. And then there were others who said the craziest things, like, you know, is it really that hard? And my answer is, yeah, it really was that hard. And it is that hard right now. And that was a difficult time to be authentic because it was very vulnerable. And I didn't have very many safe places because it from all appearances, mm-hmm. seemed like everybody else was doing great with their two kids.
Right.
And here I am floundering, mm-hmm. and feeling like if I could lock my two-year-old in his room just to not see him for a little while, mm-hmm. that would be normal, mm-hmm. right? That would be fine. Yeah, you're seeing things through different eyes when you really are exposed. And it was pretty messy.
So not surprisingly, at moments of crisis, of hardship, you are the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's my job right now to apologize to people as they go through a crisis or a difficult spot, but you have responsibilities as the one going through it,
mm-hmm.
to be able to understand that when people say crazy things, I mean, if somebody lost a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can have another.
Right.
Yeah.
What?
At least it was early.
And it goes on and on. And what's happening there is that person is suffering in the perimeter of your pain, of the suffering that you're going through. They are suffering, and they're somewhat panicked, and they feel like they got to do something kind of to protect themselves. And so if they can come up with a reason why it happened,
mm-hmm.
or why it will not happen to them, then they say it, and they're actually just kind of like a drowning person pushing somebody else under to get above water.
Hmm.
And it's the responsibility of the person, particularly if you've been authentic, I've opened myself up to this person, and they're pushing me under. They're going through all kinds of pain now. Perhaps they're getting triggered from something in their past that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and I apologize for the person who's going through the crisis. You do have some responsibility to take care of the people around you that will say ridiculous things, and or punch them in the throat.
That's usually.
Yeah, I mean.
But it happens. It happens, yeah. when you lose a parent, when you, mm-hmm. you know, we're so unaccustomed to pain and suffering in this culture,
mm-hmm.
that we flail.
Yeah.
And Christians are pretty famous for saying trite things instead of, I'm not even asking, I'm bringing food over. I'm leaving it on your front porch. I don't want to be comforted by you in your pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to leave. Or I'm going to come in and sit down next to you on the couch, and I'm going to cry. Because this is sad. And then I'm going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to vacuum your house before I leave.
Right.
I mean, this. And
right.
In our early childhood department, that is a group that is famous for this.
Mm-hmm.
We will just care for you, and we won't even ask your permission because we already mm-hmm. have a relationship. And that group is authentic as a community, and it's an example for the rest of the church.
It's funny that you mentioned early childhood because we had been at Stonebriar for a very long time and great adult fellowship and the journey, but I think we never really felt that Stonebriar as a whole, like as a church, was our home. Didn't feel known for a while because it is a large church. And so we started serving, and I think everyone should do that because mm-hmm. that is a great way to mm-hmm. be known and meet other vulnerable, authentic people. But we started serving, and Colleen was having all these gastrointestinal problems
and
was
that. Just,
I mean, constipated. It seems like when you talk about it, it's not a big deal. They were just poop problems. But it was.
And we're all dealing with various poop problems, right?
And it's, so, yeah. Like, it was our whole lives, like, were revolved around uh-huh. her going to the bathroom. And we told early childhood, and the only reason we told them, because we couldn't serve that Sunday because we didn't know if Colleen would have to poop while we were at
right.
church.
Right.
And so Linda and Kristen took Colleen during service. She walked around childhood with them while we got to go to service. And they signed up to bring us meals for this 1 week that we just had to stay at home because she mm-hmm. needed to be close to the bathroom. And y'all, on a Sunday morning, sat Colleen in this big cushy chair in the office, and you prayed for her and her poop problems. And I was like, oh, this is our home. These are our people. Like, they care about Colleen mm-hmm. pooping, and they acknowledge that we're tired and that this sucks. And y'all didn't tell us how to make her go poop, or you just, this
yeah,
sucks.
You
I'm
didn't
so
have
sorry.
Lots
I almost
of
be
advice.
So tired.
Have you tried this? Yeah.
Right. Like, and it was just, I was like, this is our home and our church.
So it is noble, a worthy cause to be authentic, but you have to be authentic with the right people.
Yeah.
Or you're just going to get turned into hamburger. So if you don't have that community, it's incumbent upon you to change churches mm-hmm. or probably serve and find the people within your church that are there mm-hmm. who are also looking for connection because mm-hmm. they're there. And sometimes somebody just has to be brave mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. make the first move. And then somebody else is like, oh, my goodness, that's me
too. This is
too.
What I've been waiting
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Somebody just as broken as me.
And then that longing can begin to be fulfilled. And very practical helps that most churches – I grew up in church. So, I mean, the hot dish, mm-hmm. that's our love language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we make casseroles for you. Or, mm-hmm. you know, for me, it's a bucket of wings because I'm not going to make a casserole for you. But – I've known people that have come hurt because they just went through a terrible thing and they didn't get any support. Like, you did what? You just had surgery?
Mm-hmm.
What? When was I supposed – well, I told somebody. And that's not being authentic. That's mm-hmm. that's being embarrassed. That's being, I don't want to be weak. I mm-hmm. sure don't want people to come pray over me before surgery because I got that gown on with the woo-woo in the back. And I mean, being authentic is, I need people.
Mm-hmm.
I need help. I don't know how to get through this. And you might try that, and it might be with the wrong people. And you're going to get bit.
I wonder if that's why I'm an introvert. Because then I can just be authentic with a few people, and then everyone else gets, you know, like, hi.
Well, yeah. I think that's an interesting comment because I think perhaps being authentic does not mean on stage
mm-hmm.
with hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that's perhaps not even authentic. That's just something else. That's, I don't know. I have negative words in my head. I don't mean it to be negative, mm-hmm. but I think being authentic is with people that you trust that have proven themselves and will allow you. Brené Brown was talking about reclaiming trust. And this is only the essence because I can't remember that. But I don't trust you until – and as a pastor, like, I will go to a hospital and I will pray or I will do pastor things.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody trusts me until I'm in the hospital.
Mm.
And if I let them come to me and take care of me, now there's trust.
Mm.
So there's this mutual vulnerability that is so bonding. And for the person who can only help and not receive it, we instinctively may not be thinking, I don't trust that person. It's just like, there's a wall or something. Mm-hmm. There's a distance. I can't get through. But they're so kind to me. I don't even know the words. It's because they're refusing to be authentic in their direction, which is a risk. So I can go to pray for people. It's not a risk for me. I'm going to pop in and leave.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's me, I better darn well be ready to let people bring me casserole, just no tuna. That's just bad. no fish.
Yeah, no
but
tuna.
Anything else would be fine. But I thought that was so interesting. That vulnerability, authenticity, only really exists in two ways, and perhaps, and I don't know what the number is, but perhaps with a limited number of people, because people will hurt people. How can we make our home a place where our spouse and our kids, they are free to be authentic? How do we set the table? You can't force somebody to be authentic.
Right.
It's a very passive invitation of sorts. How do you or how would you invite someone else, and most importantly, those in our life?
I think, like you just said, the being vulnerable yourself in front of your family is paramount to that. Like turning to your spouse and being like, God, I feel weak right now. Like I'm not doing good. I don't know what's going on, but I'm really struggling. And just letting them in on that so they know that this is safe. Like you're not always awesome. And the kids too, I don't know, just focusing on how they're actually feeling and if they're having a meltdown, like, okay, like, what's going on? Not immediately being like, this is ridiculous. This is a silly thing to be crying about, because that's what I want to do a lot of times.
Which is an act of self-protection.
So, how so?
Like, I shouldn't be feeling like this.
Oh, right.
So I'm sorry.
Well, no, like, I want to, like, I tend to almost do that with them. Like, Jensen exploded last night because there were no napkins in the napkin holder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude, this is a ridiculous reason to cry. And I wanted to just say, this is crazy. Stop it. Go to bed.
I see.
But instead, if I just talk to him, then maybe, hopefully, then when he's 16, we've established he can feel crazy things and still tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. The goal.
I think that's a very valid point. Particularly, I mean, he's three.
So no napkins. I mean,
being able to navigate and moderate your own emotions is a huge life skill.
Right.
And if I can't even tell you what my emotions are, all I'm going to do is learn how to not have them. Well, I have to have them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to tell you about them.
Right.
And then I'm going to go punch the drywall or. Mm-hmm. So yes, the authenticity is allowing other people to be a mess. And what I thought you were going after is, as a parent, I don't want my kid to know that I'm struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I bump into that a lot. I mean, there's the dad who's been out of work for, you know, weeks, and nobody, including his wife, knows. Because I don't want her to stress out. Mm-hmm. I don't want her to – that is – so selfish, so self-protecting. I remember when my dad was out of work for 9 months, and we lived through that. And they told us, you know, I'm out of work. We're gonna, And I had a single dollar bill, and this was in the 60s, and I put it, you know, in my box. I saved the dollar for, you know, we might need it.
Mm.
And then it was there when he got a job 9 months later. It was not traumatizing to me. It was like, this is a problem.
Right.
Well, and there's that openness, right, that comes from having a family experience together. When my dad died, a pastor, very well-meaning, I'm sure, said, your kids will deal with this however you deal with this, to my mom. Well, her take on that was, okay, I can't cry in front of them. I've got to be stoic and strong and just gut this out. And I remember as a child thinking, I am horribly sad. Why isn't my mom sad?
That's,
you know, and so maybe there's something wrong with my sadness.
With you, sure.
I didn't know she was crying herself to sleep behind a closed door, but in retrospect, 25 years later, I wish I had known, God, this was really hard for her because it was hard for me, and I felt like something was
wrong with me. That would be fairly called cognitive dissonance. My thinking is not matching up with my reality, or their feelings are not matching, and I don't know who's wrong. And yes, I would encourage any parent to, I'm sad and I'm crying. Mommy, are you okay?
No, not today. I'm sad. I don't know why.
and then it's safe to be sad. Right. Your child will learn that when they're sad, completely acceptable to be sad.
And when you mess
sad.
Up, like I messed up. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot in the car. I shouldn't have said that word, y'all.
a great
sorry.
Phrase that I've recently come across is rupture and repair. And the very nature of relationships are not, and we hit a certain level and we just flourished. It's rupture and repair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's, I did, in this case, I was authentic, and then I was not. And so I repaired it, and then we moved on, and then they ruptured it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not shocked or surprised. I'm not. The very nature of relationships is rupture, and when it happens, nobody's freaking out because we've had so much experience with the repair part.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that it means we've got to go out to dinner and we got to get some time.
Yeah.
Instead of, I think it's over. Or, I can't be with you anymore. We just got to fix this. Mm-hmm. And that kind of authenticity makes for a more peaceful home. Is we're not shocked that things went wrong. We expected it to go wrong. And we expected for you to tell me that I hurt you. And we'll fix it because it's okay. And I just thought that was such an interesting, kind of super obvious, because it's just, the relationships are just, there's an ebb and a flow. And when I'm free to tell you how I feel, then we can fix it. But if I don't know, or if I can't tell you.
Well, and then you're not alone.
Right, right.
And you can feel awfully lonely if you feel like you don't have a place to express yourself.
As we're kind of coming around the bend here, what things do you think must be present for authenticity to breathe and grow? Like if you were going to sit with a friend and they said, I'm not, my home, whatever, my marriage is not, what, and I have no experience with this, what would you recommend? How would you set the table in a home for authenticity to be able to exist?
I think unconditional love has to be there, mm-hmm. and it has to be just overwhelming. The family knows you're loved. You're going to mess up. You're loved. And there's nothing you can do that would make me love you less. There's nothing you can do that would make me love you more. I think that has to be there.
I'm trying to recall the exact words, but Dallas Willard defines love as wanting the best or wanting the good for another even if it's at my expense.
Mm. Yeah.
As opposed to, I love them so much, I'm going to let them do whatever they want. Because that's just crazy. That's actually self-centered.
Right.
But that unconditional love, which might be a new phrase for some people to hear, and what does that mean? I mean, we talk about that stuff around here all the time. But has to. I mean, that's. I think about relationships in terms of, and you've been around me long enough to know, I'm always thinking and talking in metaphors. In a relationship, a terrible metaphor would be a factory. Like, we just got to assemble this thing just right, and then we'll have a healthy there's a million bad ones. The best one to me is a garden. Because there's 3-5 things that are necessary for this to be a garden. And if you don't do one of them, if you don't water, it's not going to work. But if you do these few things, you're kind of done for the day. Like, you're not going to make it grow any faster by standing there.
Right.
It's an invitation. And the plants grow, and they need sunshine, they need water, they need darkness, actually, they need weeding. But they don't need to be yanked out of the dirt, and they don't need to be bent a certain way. So in relationships, I think it's almost always an invitation that can be refused. And that's part of the danger of being authentic, is I'm going to tell you about me. That's an invitation.
Right.
And, but that kind of love, if that's not there, I'm not going in. I don't feel safe. So absolutely, unconditional love.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also if I am ever approached by someone who I can tell, like, this is a stretch for them, they're trying to open themselves up, but there's a fear, right, of am I going to be judged? Is this a safe place to listen more than I talk? And this is not a competition. This is not you're hurting. Well, let me tell you how I'm hurting, maybe a little bit more, like this one-upmanship. But just saying, I'm sorry, or I do understand, if that's true, if that's truth. Not just, I know how you feel, just because we like to say that in Christianese. I know exactly how you feel. And being slow to give advice. I think giving them a place where they can just share what they're dealing with, then I can allow the Holy Spirit to guide me in what I'm going to then respond with, which is more often than not advice, but just a place where they know I love them, I care about them. And it's okay to be exactly who you are with me right now.
Safe.
Safe. Yeah.
That might be a good word. I would add a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because we're going to drop the ball constantly. And to be able to say, I can't believe I said that last night. What was I? Yeah, I thought the same thing. I would perhaps add a courage to alter course. Like what I've been doing. I just became aware that doesn't work, or it's hitting you in a different way than I expected. And I'm in this for you, so
right.
I can authentically say it was me. I've got, and I'm going to change because I don't want to protect myself more than I want to take care of you. But that's some vulnerability. Like, I'm wrong. I did this, or I was not thought, I wasn't paying any attention to your emotions. That's a level of authenticity that you've teed yourself up to get clubbed like a baby seal. Because the other person could say, no, you didn't. And you never do. And and now you've just trained them that this is not a safe topic or a safe place. So when someone offers you, is an invitation, you need to take that very seriously and carefully for their benefit, as Morgan, as you were saying just a little while ago, because they're there's an offering that's going back and forth. And if I can give you a little offering, then next time I can offer a little bit more. And that's probably how you should go into it. You should not just walk into a strange room or a new church and go, blah. It should be growing safely and carefully. Thank you.
Thank you.
For coming in and being vulnerable, being authentic. And you are part of the community down in early childhood that is really quite famous for taking care of each other. And you are an example walking around, not just when you're recording. You both really are authentic. And I'm really rather tired of hearing about how wonderful both of you are. And not because you're accomplishing so much.
And not we have excellence.
Yes, not because you're excellent.
Yeah.
It's because people actually want to be around authentic people who are safe. And you're wonderful examples of that. Well, this has been another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. It's not easy to get that out.
That's an alliteration there.
So I would invite you to practice, to try some of the things that we've talked about in a safe environment. And if you get your hand slapped, if you get bit, if you get wounded, don't stop. Don't give up. But go find someone else. Go find another place or another person, because living authentically is life affirming. It's what Jesus did. It's what he's offering to us. It's the path toward peace. And to live without it is terrible. So this is Pastor Dave Carl, and remember to not do life and don't do parenting.